Hello, mini MBAs. How are you? I trust you're well. I am not well. I have been sick. I went to Brisbane this week, really excited, going to work for a very big, loved client of mine, proper work, on a new brand. And on the way there, I started getting sick, and I had gastro. I had to end up going to see the doctor about it. It was so bad. And I've only just got home. So I was there the whole time they were working in the hotel that they booked for me, but I never left the hotel room once. It was horrendous. Still is. So I've had a terrible week, I have to be honest with you. I'm so glad to be home, where I'm safe. Anyway, I hope you've had a better time of it. We're in an important place, right? Because we've been through our two. This is welcome to session. We're in an important place now because you've had the first of the two P's. I'm not saying they're the most important. I'm just saying they're the first of the two. And we're kind of midway through tactics. I'm going to talk a lot about what we're going to do in the next Q&A and in module 10 related to the exam at the end of this Q&A. But we've got quite a nice tight cluster of questions. So I'm going to get through the questions first, and then we'll talk a little bit about what's next. All right, maybe about 35, 40 minutes today. All right. Ricardo. Hello, Ricardo. Using your analogy of the leaky pipe, how do you reconcile focusing your efforts on the holes to plug, i.e. those 2 to 3 objectives for the year, versus maintaining the integrity of the rest of the pipe so you don't have new holes later? Example, when analyzing the funnel, I may find that consideration is a key focus area for the year, but I also know maintaining awareness is key for the brand. But it may not be a key focus for the year. So there's two answers, right? It's a great question. The first answer is it's part of the long of it, okay? So usually, not always, but usually more top of funnel stuff, like awareness. And remember, we're putting a lot of our money just into the long of it anyway, right? So a lot of that money is just designed to maintain awareness, maintain consideration. Second, don't forget that your funnel is a function of previous year's work. So it doesn't degrade as quickly, even in fast-moving markets, as you might think. Ehrenberg Bass did some marketing on it. And if you stop all advertising, so everything, your sales, you lose like 14% of sales the following year. And that's because it takes a while for your funnel to begin to shrink, right? Because last year's marketing is still probably working. So my advice, Ricardo, even though it's imprecise, is don't worry too much about that. Yeah, when you do your research each year, you'll get a natural sense of if things are dropping back. And if they do drop back, then obviously what it tells you is make it an objective. But in many cases, the overall brand spend will keep and overall other factors, previous marketing, will keep the funnel kind of as it is. But if something like awareness is going to drop back during the year, you can absolutely set it as an objective because you expect it to go back a certain amount or the research is showing it's already. So focus on it, but it's more about incremental. And if you can do your research on your funnel late enough in the year, you'll pick up anything that may be fading already. Fiona, I'm just going to zoom in so I can see your question. Fiona Selick, how do you go about pricing a product that has never been brought to market before? I work in a B2B business and I'm bringing a software product to market which collates data that hasn't been exposed to the market before. Very exciting. But because of this, we've no idea how to benchmark our prices. I really like the idea of the Van Westendorp approach, but I'm finding it hard to define the scale. It could be 20K or 1 million pounds. Where do I start? You start with Van Westendorp, Fiona. Listen to me. You don't need to define the scale, right? They're open-ended questions. If you can define what the product does, right, with a simple bit of explanation, you know, it's new, but, you know, you can explain the benefit to customers. It does this versus that and enables you to get this and this guaranteed. Customers will then give you an estimate of price. You don't put a scale on Van Westendorp, Fiona. The whole point of it is you let the customers put the numbers in for you and then you aggregate them out. So Van Westendorp is perfect for you. The only thing you'd have to work out is how much do you explain to these people what the product will do as a benefit before you then take the price. It's a perfect method. The only other method you can use if you want some solidity is that even though you're a new product, you may well be replacing two, three, four other subsidiary products that now are unnecessary because your product does it all, right? I worked with a company recently that's offering both financial advice and legal advice. And one of the ways they can price that service is by working out what those individual things cost a SME business and essentially going, we can charge more than either, but less than the two combined. Let's put it at this price point. So you can always look for substitutes as well. But the better method is Van Westendorp. You can do it right away. Do it. James O'Leary. Hi, Mark. I hope you are well. Read the note in Module 8 around forming a team to complete the exam. Could you give us the pros and cons? Yeah. It's a good question. So we really introduced the idea of a team because there's about half of you are working in a company that's put a few of you through the course. And we wanted to encourage you, if you're in a department or a team, to form a little group or big group and do it all together because it's fun. Then we found there were some other people that wanted to work with strangers because they wanted to do that. And we encouraged that too. Having said that, when I publish the top 10 performers in the exam, as per usual, I will be amazed if more than one team features, even though lots of people do form teams. So it seems like, if I could summarize, working in a team is more fun and you might learn a bit more from the process, but your performance won't be as good as if you just do it yourself, which is an interesting insight, yeah? So either way, it works. But yeah, if you wanted to form a team with someone, I think you should probably find someone you already know a lot easier, who you can physically get together with. I don't mean in an appropriate way. I mean, like, you're in the same city. But yeah, it's your choice. It's your choice, James. You're not missing out if you don't form a team, I think is the thing I want to tell most of you. Most people will do it on their own and probably do better than if they're in a team squabbling. Tim Healy, a few weeks back, Jeff Fripp spreadsheets. Is there any news on these? And will we be able to get a full working set for Mac? I'd love to use them with a client who urgently needs support. Yeah, well, Tim, honestly, we fixed this. It's our fault we didn't tell you. I set one of the team up to sort out the chaos. He told me, I think about a week ago, that he'd sorted out the chaos. But he obviously hasn't communicated how he's fixed it. So I have asked him this morning, because I saw your question, I've asked him this morning to post something on our LinkedIn group, okay? Which basically will tell you the answer. I'm not sure about the Apple thing, okay? That's the only thing. You might have to borrow someone's, like, non-Apple machine, which I know is a pain in the ass, but these days I thought everything was pretty integrated. Anyway, if that doesn't work, I'll put you in touch with the great man himself, Mr. Fripp, Professor Fripp. But to my knowledge, we fixed it and we've got it all fixed, and it was apologies for the mess. Look for a message from Glenn later today on LinkedIn. Neil Fellows, Mr. Fellows, in the Van Westendorp pricing model, to what extent do you reveal the product benefits, any pricing ideas, prior to asking the four questions? What I mean is, do you say, here are the benefits and this is the price we're thinking of? Here are the benefits and then ask the four questions? Yeah, I mean, the latter. You don't want to give any framing clues at all, right? Because you're trying to get a sense of what their value is, not what your hand is. And even benefits, yeah, but don't forget you've got to describe the product itself and its features and maybe some of the benefits. So it's kind of, you know, it's either a paragraph that explains this product that they don't know, or more ideally, it's a prospect who's already kind of aware of it, but hasn't gone too far into it yet. Like, so when we do it, we've used Van Westendorp three times to work on price for the mini MBA. When I've done it, I've completely cheated, Neil, and I've done it on people who've just bought the course, literally bought the course. So we've gone out to, I don't know, however many it was, 200 people who just purchased it, and we said, okay, don't worry. You've paid 1,500 quid. Thank you. Can't wait for you to join the course. But can I ask you four questions? Rewind back to your purchase decision. Four questions. One, two, three. Now, that's really naughty because they've already paid and we have kind of revealed the price. But also, we've only sampled the people that are already kind of through the door. We've lost the ones that didn't work for. So it's not ideal. The ideal, which I still haven't managed to do, is recruit 200 people who've, for the first time, visited our website, spend at least, I don't know, 3 minutes on the site, and then immediately go back to them and go, hey, you, I'll give you a $25 coupon for the mini MBA if you answer me these four questions. Because that's the kind of person that, again, we've revealed too much about price, but now they've kind of got their head around the price and they're in the target market. So it's that would be the balance that I would recommend in terms of managing it out. But wherever possible, the general rules are don't reveal the price at all if you can, but have them already be kind of aware of what your product can do one way or another. That's the ideal, which very rarely is achieved. Branko, hey Branko. What if market research shows that our target segment loves to buy, or what? Let me do that again. What if our market research shows that our targeted segment loves to buy, or that it makes the majority of its decisions based on a discount? Is it smart to then show our profitable price as a price on a permanent discount? That's a very interesting question, and I definitely don't know the answer. I mean, if consumers say that discounts are the thing that motivates them the most, and that's the driver of purchase, my first thought is get out of the market, because someone's going to come in repeatedly and undercut you. You're going to be in a price war. No one's going to make any money. Yeah, find a different market. My first response. That's how bad it is, Franco. But yeah, I suppose what you would do is you would do a permanent discount, which is legal. And you would start looking for another market or another product, because this market, if that really is the big driver, is I look for the brand that's on discount, you're in a circle of hell that you'll never get out of. Gavin, hi Mark. Any thoughts on going beyond MPS to also ascertain if there's an emotional connection? I know the Dark Lord makes a compelling argument that this is a ludicrous idea, which I believe is typically correct. However, my own experience suggests it's not always the case. In my past role, inspired by an article in the HBR showing how emotional connection trumps satisfaction, I also wanted to see if we had an emotional connection. It turned out 83% of our promoters agreed with always deliver, proud to be a customer, and a perfect company for me statements. And that group of advocates spent 36% more than 17% of promoters without the emotional connection. I also got customer service to call any negatives or neutrals, which helped improve the NPS, which got to plus 73. Brilliant. This obviously wouldn't work to the same extent for all categories, but do you think there's a case for bothism with advocacy and still having a valid place at marketing table alongside the cold, hard, brutal Ehrenberg Bass? Yeah, look, first of all, yes, Gav. But second, look, I'm a big fan of customizing everything, my friend. And I'm a huge enemy of those that tell us there's only one way that it can be done. Not just bothism, but the best market research instruments, the best questionnaires are customized to your brand, to your category, to your customers. So keep NPS. But by God, yeah, what you've done is that by adding emotion for your product, not necessarily anyone else's, you've uncovered a much better a way of understanding what drives happiness. I don't care if other people don't approve. Your proof is in your pudding, yeah? So first of all, well done. This is question of the week. But second, keep going. NPS is just a couple of questions, right? Customize every questionnaire to suit your brand. Have your confidence to do that. There's nothing worse than a generic questionnaire that someone's given you, right? Build it backwards, as we said, all the way back to module 2, and have the confidence to go, I'm building a questionnaire that captures my market. Don't care what the general rules are, because the general rules don't apply to my specific brand. So well done. Question of the week. Congratulations. Winnicar. Ryan Fu. Hi, Mark. With discounts being a categorical bane for profitability, how do we deal with online marketplaces that value discounts and deals over everything? My product is being sold on Shopee and Lazada, two major e-commerce platforms in Asia, and we derive 50% of our monthly revenue from these sources. However, as customers, they're very price sensitive and they usually wait for special campaigns on these platforms before they make a purchase. As a result, the platform's algorithm favors SKUs that present the best deal to customers. The more discounts you give, the more visibility and traffic the platform offers you. Bastards. Though we see a significant surge in sales, more than 10 times, the discounts can extend to 30% off our listed price. On the bright side, such campaigns are one day only and our price reverts to normal after that. Should such one-day-only massive sales be a cause for... Yeah. I remember I did a meeting. I was working for a very up-and-coming beauty brand, and they wanted to get into a very large beauty retailer, and I went out to make the case for them. And the buying team at the global retailer said, nah, no way. And I said, why? And they said, and they showed me this discount that had been run just for one day online in one country. And they're like, we don't deal with it. And it killed a massive deal. Yeah? Gives you some idea, Ryan, of the problems of it. Now, having said that, I'm not naive enough to say to you, walk away from 50% of your monthly revenue. I can give you another example where I worked for a very large wine brand that was doing 70% of its national sales in a very large market through. And because of the rules in that market, the discounter wasn't getting the product cheaper. You know, it was a great sale for our company. It just was hurting the brand and our other distribution agreements, but they were selling it 20% lower than they should have sold it. And we couldn't do anything to stop them from doing that. And what's more, it was 70% of our sales. And in the end, what we decided strategically is we'll take this sale. For us, it's very profitable. And we'll accept the pain that this is causing. And then we will reinvest some of the money we're making, more than we normally would, into brand building elsewhere to offset the damage that this discount does. And that's probably my best recommendation. Take your money, but put more of it back into brand, because going to need it because it's going to damage you lots of ways, even though it makes you good money. Chandni, hey Chandni, I work in a media agency and there are various teams across the agency from biddable and also planning, or sometimes called comms account teams. My question is, suppose if a brand wants to launch a go-to market campaign in a new market, naturally it makes sense at least to work to increase product awareness in that market. If we want to move users down the funnel to drive new customers, when it comes to pulling together a marketing strategy for the client, what route would you recommend? Should we take a measurement approach first, where we set the business and campaign goals first and define ways in which we would measure against APIs we set and work with maybe Google or Facebook or TikTok or other platforms to define customer service surveys you mentioned in this module to help measure attitudinal effectiveness of running media channels? Or two, plan the media first, gain a holistic view across all channels and understanding frequency before providing a recommendation on how one measures success. No. Now, Chandni, you've got to let go of number two, okay? Strategy before tactics, okay? Diagnosis or strategy in all things, okay? So I know you work for a media agency. The temptation is plan the media first, but then the car is in front of the horse, okay? Do your diagnosis, build your funnel, set your strategic objectives, then choose your media. Do it that way, it will. Promise. It will. Great question. Lucy Ackland, in the last Q&A, you mentioned the Tracksuit report a lot for industry benchmarks. I've tried to download it and they never sent the report. I'm wondering if you have a copy. Yes. I put the link in the column that I'm going to send out anyway on Triple Cooked Budgets. So, yes, I'll put out a link to it, Lucy, just for you, which takes you straight to it, okay? It's very useful and it's free. You've got to put your name and stuff in, but then you can just access the thing. I think maybe the mistake you're making is they ask you for your name and details. You can put anything you like in there. Once you do that, you can just get into the calculator. They don't send it to you. You just fill out those details and then you can get into the calculator down below. I'll send it to you again this week. Miriam Kruger. Hello, Miriam. When do you exactly release the exam? On Monday the 14th, which time? Or do you release the exam already on Friday the 11th? We'll talk about it at the end, Miriam, in about 15 minutes. Okay, I'll go through it with lots of stuff. All fire. Blaze James. Hey, Blaze, how are you? I love to hear your thoughts on the famous JCPenney story about the CEO, Ron Johnson, who got rid of the inflated discounting in favor of fair and square everyday pricing. Okay, here's my take on it, Blaze, very quickly. I think Ron Johnson, a good man, from Apple, took the strategy playbook of Apple and applied it directly to JCPenney and failed as a result because he did not do his diagnosis on JCPenney, which, as an expert, I can point this out, is a very different company from Apple. So I think Ron Johnson's big mistake was applying exactly the strategy that he'd seen and grown up with at Apple, the JCPenney, and what do you know? It didn't work. That's my take on it. It's a fascinating thing, right? Total disaster. Anita Donnelly, apologies for asking a question. Way back to module one. Anita Donnelly, where have you been? Once offered a new marketing role before becoming biased, what could one do in the few weeks before starting the new job to maximize the last days of being a... Oh, look, I wouldn't worry, Anita. I think you've just lost it already. You already know you're working for them. The reality is what you do is you go, I'm no longer a customer. I'm going to become an employee. So what I'm going to do now is go out and just hang out and watch people buy this product. I'm going to talk to them about it. I'm going to study it and just use the time profitably to learn from customers. You're already native, but that doesn't mean you can't do a little bit of cheeky yet. Connor Barron. Hi, Mark. When using MPS, where in the product life cycle, at sign up after a year, etc., or how often should we be using MPS? MPS directly after signing up may be very different to the MPS after a year or more. We use MPS across our business, but often at different stages of the life cycle, which is, what Reichheld recommends. And I worry about comparing MPS from one stage versus another, particularly when it's across different product and service touchpoints. Similarly, we are a portfolio organization in everything from fin services to telco to logistics. How do you suggest managing the reaction to the variation of MPS that inevitably appear based on the vertical from? The natural tendency for management and others will be start comparing MPS. Lovely questions, Connor. So there's a difference of opinion on how to measure MPS. When it was invented by Reichheld, he said, as you note, do it at every touch point. Kind of, you know, every time you answer the phone, we're going to ask you an MPS question. I think that's overkill. There's lots of companies that don't. That's fine with me. I like MPS in one of two ways. Either as part of the annual brand tracking, which is how we'll do it with you guys at the exit interview. We'll say two of the questions will be MPS and why that MPS. Or I like it in companies that don't have enough time to do a big brand tracking questionnaire, doing it as a Christmas thank you. So I, you know, with lots of B2B clients, I say to them, look, if you do nothing else, send an email to all of your decision makers of all your clients week before Christmas and go, first of all, thanks for your business. We really appreciate it. Second of all, if you click on this link, there are literally two questions. They're answered anonymously. They're enormously important in helping deliver a better service next week. Please take 2 minutes of your time. Help us out. Yeah. You get 70% completion rates. And that data is just there as an annual Gestalt score. That's how I like it. You can do it any which way you want. In terms of comparisons, you're absolutely right, though. It is super important to realize that MPS is a totally relative score. It's relative to category, as we said in the course. It's also relative to country, as we said in the course. And to your point, it's relative to different divisions. Not because one division's better than another, but because it's just relative to the customer dynamics in each different business. So I'd always say the way to do it, Connor, is show it in context with competitors. Never just have your brand's score across five different verticals. Have it in a league table with the other main brands. So then you get a sense of that relativity. That works pretty good. Millie. Hello, Millie. Hi, Mark. This may be a question for later in the course. Well, it's now or never. But as we progress through the steps, I'm wondering if you could give some advice as how your time should be spent in each stage of the process. Should your time be split equally between each or spend 30% on research alone or along the same lines? If you were to start from scratch at a new company, how long would you expect to be able to complete the process? That's a good question, Millie. Look, I've done this a lot when I go into multinationals and I work with marketing teams and we sort of put in place a marketing planning process. My advice has always been the same, right? It probably, and this is a very broad generalization, putting a marketing plan together, a decent one, like we've been working on through the modules, is probably going to take you around about 2 months. So it can take longer, about 2 months. Not full time. You're still doing day-to-day stuff. And most of that time is in doing your diagnosis, gathering your data and getting your survey back or doing your data collection. Because they're the hard yards, right? And then there's a bit of time with strategy, and you're just thinking about strategy after that. If you gave yourself 2 months with about 6 weeks to do the diagnosis phase and a bit of time to get feedback, that's pretty much what I would say is the standard. But it varies. Delise Dixon. Delise, how are you? Delise, what are your thoughts on survey fatigue? I believe many brands we interact with daily are gathering data to measure customer satisfaction. insurance, banks, retailers? Are people getting sick of filling in the surveys? And how do you overcome objections from leadership team for not measuring NPS because of this? I do think they are fatigued, and I think it's a massive problem with data completion. Two recommendations. If you make the questionnaire really fun and intuitive to complete, have a look at the exit survey we're going to use on you, Delise, in a couple of weeks from Flood. They do a beautiful job with sliding things that make it fun. That helps relieve that. But second, don't over-measure. Again, back to this point about NPS at every touch point. I think, you know, it even gets to the point where you want to ensure that if you're surveying your own customers, do them every 4 years and make sure you don't sample them every year, because you can get a sample of customers that's enough and then ensure that next year they won't be in the sample. I think it's super important. And I don't think, if you can get enough customers without doing everyone, you're in a much better place to get better insight. But yeah, make the questionnaire short and fun to complete is a big part. Number two, when setting price, can you use multiple methods to determine the final price? E.g., Van Westendorp and Casey Brown's value approach. If so, how would you approach the scenario where our defined value is more than the perfect price point? Look, you can. It's called triangulation. The more data points, the better. And if you find yourself in a place where the two data points contradict each other, you can decide which method you trust more, or you could take the higher price, or you could weigh it out. I don't know. I know that having two data points is better than one, and leads to better discussion. Yeah. So you can't have too many good methods for doing this. The more data, the better. Yeah. In aiding the decision. And number three, I work with a consultancy business. A big percentage of our work comes from winning tenders for government or indigenous groups. Lowest price really can be the deciding factor to winning a project over another provider, as it's taxpayer money. How would you move away from dropping your rates just to secure a project? So I've worked a lot in tendering stuff, Elise. And I can tell you one thing. If you wait for the tender to be issued, you're probably going to lose. And it probably will go to the cheapest player. The trick with tendering is to get into the tendering process, if possible, and help write the tender and swing it in a completely fair way towards the kind of. Finally, Zoe Dawes. Hey, Zoe, how are you? I've had a couple of people reach out about working together on a group assignment, but I'm not sure how I should approach this. What's really popular woman, Zoe? Popular. What's required, and should I work with others to complete the exam? Well, we'll get to that. Apologies, I'm a little behind on the content due to the number of changes at work. Don't you worry, Zoe. You're obviously doing something right, because everyone wants to work with you. So be careful, Zoe. Being in a team can be good, but also being in a team can be bad. It depends on who you're in the team with. Yeah, and I think that's an important point. Remember, James O'Leary's kind of already asked this question. I've sort of answered it already. But what I'd say to you is we've put an instruction thing out, I think in week 8, which is how you can form a team. Once the exam begins, we can't let you form teams, because then at that point it gets crazy. You have to make sure, if you want to form a team, let us know using the instructions on or before the deadline date. But you're not missing out if you do it on your own. In fact, it might be easier doing it on your own. And certainly the performance data suggests that those that do it solo tend to do better. But Zoe, you're very popular here. Several people reaching out already. You've got the magic stuff. So you may want to, you could interview them, see if they're suitable, and then form a team or not, right? It's your call. It really doesn't matter. Either way, it's fun. It's a lot of fun. And we get the same report. And we've tested this. Enjoyment of the exam is the same whether you're in a team or solo, pretty much. Performance, I think, is better solo. But you can't really lose. All right, on the topic of exam then, we had a couple of questions about it. Let's finish by talking about it. So here's where we are. You've done product and price. Congratulations. We move on to our last two Ps, modules 9 and 10. Module 9 is comps, integrated marketing communications, next week. Really fun, really important applied module. And then module 10, equally importantly, about distribution, the place P. But at the end of that module, I will also talk about the exam for about 15 minutes at the end of the class. I'm doing that because module 10 is launched on Monday, November the 14th. And that on that day, that tile opens as usual, but so also does the exam tile over there. Okay? So you can access the exam tile from the start of week 10, okay? November the 14th. We are giving you 11 days to do the exam, okay? It doesn't take 11 days. It takes 4 or 5 hours or 1 or 2 sittings, okay? We're giving you 11 days because everyone's busy and we want you to do it whenever you have time in your busy diary, okay? But don't panic. You don't need to spend the next 10 days working on it, I swear, okay? In module 10, I'll talk about the exam and set it up. And you'll also have lots of information and guidance in the exam file when we open it up about this term's exam. Okay, it's all there. Don't worry. It's very clear. Okay, you can then have, as you can see, the 14th, the 15th, the 16th, the 17th. And then on Friday, the 18th, we have our last Q&A. So by then you've had a look at the exam. You can ask any exam questions you like in our final Q&A. I may or may not be able to answer them depending on how much you're asking for the answers, but you can ask me anything that's not clear there and I'll answer it, okay? And then you still have another week to complete and submit the exam by November the 20th. If you're too busy, you don't have to do the exam, okay? It's an optional exam. You'll get a pass if you don't do the exam, but try and find the time. It's great fun and it's a big part of learning on the. All right, I am off. I will return in a better shape in 2 weeks' time, and we will have our final Q&A and also discuss the exam. Stay well. See you in 2 weeks.